Welcome to the 89th edition of the Gooner Podcast, recorded at the start of the international break after we beat West Brom 3-0. This podcast is sponsored by GoonerShirts.com, the finest website for all of your Arsenal t-shirts. I'm your host, David Udo, and I'm continuing with the panel from the podcast just recorded, meaning on the other side of the table from me are Mark Hollington, Mike Francis and Simon Rose. Now guys, we're just having an off-the-record conversation, so why the hell can't we put it on tape? Can anyone explain how exactly Arsenal managed to score 5 goals at Stamford Bridge against Chelsea? Mark?
I've got no idea. All I know is it's one of those strange games that's been in the Premiership quite a lot in the Open. You know, there's been the kind of 8-2 defeat that we've suffered at the hands of Man United, that scintillating defeat of United by City. It's been that crazy, crazy kind of start to the season. I've got no idea. Both teams were attacking full pelt for 90 minutes. Both defences played very high lines, which obviously led to it being easy to kind of score. And the second half, the Chelsea defence went to pot. But I just think it's one of those matches where you can't legislate at all. Very similar to the 4-4 game against, you know, Spurs having a while ago, even that crazy 5-4 game when we won at White Hart Lane, which was brilliant a few years back. So I've got the answers for you, Dave. I really don't know, apart from what a game. It was brilliant. And games like that don't come around too often. And it was flipping amazing. And I got a picture of John Terry slipping over and an RVP running past him. And that was just an exquisite, exquisite moment. But even then, I thought we weren't going to win. So when Man Bursa got that last goal, what a euphoric feeling. I screamed so much, my baby daughter started crying, my wife told me off. It didn't matter one thing, it was phenomenal. That is why we support football. That is why we support our club. Games like that make it being totally worthwhile. And I wish I was at Stamford Bridge. I'm gutted I wasn't there, but it was amazing anyway. I'll shut up.
Sorry, but apart from it's a funny old game, which is essentially what Mark just told us, can you explain how we managed to score 5 goals at Stamford Bridge?
I think partly it's, you know, if you get an early goal in a game and then the other team comes back, both teams can lose a little bit of the confidence in defence. Chelsea's shape completely went, and that goal that Santos got, there was no one near him. He kind of, you know, sort of trundled in from quite a distance. I don't even think his actual shot was perhaps what he intended, but it was within the frame of the goal, and the goalkeeper couldn't stop it, so it went in. But Chelsea's shape completely went, and it kind of amuses me because people are really making a massive fuss about their manager, you know, perfectly correctly pronouncing his name with every Portuguese angle involved. And I just think he's just a poor man's Mourinho. I think he's being found out. And it can't just be as easy to get someone from Porto who's won stuff and think you're going to get your Mourinho back. I think that really showed that they've got some problems. And it was fantastic to see that we really took advantage. Now, Van Persie's in really good form. And I think, as you alluded, Mark, when it was at 3-2 to us, you almost didn't want to think, wow, we could actually win this game, possibly 3-2. You're thinking, Christ, Chelsea are going to get something. Then that split second before Song could just get there, of course, Mata, who of course we could, maybe should have had, whacks in a wonderful goal. 3-3, and you're thinking, God, they're probably going to get a late goal and win this 4-3. I think I've seen this game before. The fact that in that split second when Terry slips, just that moment when he's gone to the floor and Van Persie is still moving, you're thinking, this is a season-defining moment. He doesn't fall over, the game could have ended 3-3, or maybe they'd have won. Van Persie goes off, you're confident he's going to score, and suddenly that Jeff Hurst-like wallop for the 5-3, and the way the players were so absolutely just on such a high at the end, that kind of confidence, you know, you wish you literally could bottle it, because we want them to live off that now.
In fairness, the commentator on Sky did go Kenneth Walson home on it, thinking that Stamford Bridge had something else, and said there are some racists on the pitch. They think it's all over. It is now.
That's good, David.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm here.
Glad you're back.
Hey, no problem.
With nuggets like that,
Mike. With regards to what Simon's just said, an awful lot of mention, certainly towards the end, with regards to Robin Van Persie. Bearing in mind, you remember that game, and then shortly after we play the Champions League game with Gian Park up front rather than him. Do you think we're a new one man team with regards to Robin Van Persie?
No, not at all. He's just on the end of all the moves at the moment. But the fact is, as we sort of talked about in the last podcast, is that there are players that are creating chances for him. Were we called a one man team when Henri was up front? Well, yeah, we probably were, but not as much. We weren't as reliant on Henri, you know, we had the likes of Pires and that. You know, even when Wrighty was up front, were we a one-man team then? Yeah, again, we probably were. No more so than we are now. But, you know, I just think he's the focal point of the team. And that's because he's out in outstanding form and deservedly, you know, he's getting all the plaudits that he rightly deserves.
There's no harm in that, is there? I mean, let's face it, Barcelona had Messi.
Yeah.
Madrid, they've got Ronaldo. Lots of teams with a really great player. That great player does a lot of stuff for them.
Yeah, so many teams have had a focal point. And, yeah. You know, we've gone and played lots of teams, like when Kaká was in AC Milan and was on fire. And, you know, you're really worried about this one player and you thought planning to bottle him up. And it's like, well, were they called one-man teams? No.
I think in a way it's the latest stick to beat Arsenal with. You know, the media love an agenda, the media love a narrative to give to their public, to their audience. And with Arsenal it was Wenger crisis, and it's defensive crisis, and once those things wane a little bit, it becomes, well, one-man team. It's just the latest stick, I think.
And it's one-man team whose contract is running down.
Which they love it.
Yeah.
Which the media will mention it. Every single article mentions
it, you know. It's just like, oh.
Well, moving 20 yards back from the centre-forward position to the midfield, I mean, how does the new-look midfield of Song slightly behind Arteta and Ramsey, or Song and Arteta slightly behind Ramsey, I mean, how is that shaping up, and who drops out when Jack Wilshere finally returns to fitness, Mark?
Ramsey, I want to mention first, because I think he was unfairly slagged off in his podcast in recent editions, I think by Kevin Witcher, actually, was giving him a very, very hard time. I always said Aaron Ramsey would come good. I think the mistake people made was saying he's the new Fabregas. He isn't. He's more of a water carrier type player than that, but with skill. He's got, you know, nice touch and everything else. But that guy needed games. He needed to feel his way back into matches. And it's taken him a while to get there, but the guy never stops running, never stops working, I mean, ever stops trying. And against Wales, especially against England, he was absolutely brilliant. Mm. And you could see what a great player he actually was. In the last three or four games, we are seeing the Ramsey before he got injured. I think he will come back better than he was before. I think it's a total fallacy that he won't be after the injury. I think that's rubbish. Mm. I think he's a fulcrum on which our midfield is going to be. And I reckon that when Wilshere does come back, I can see Song stepping out. I honestly believe that Ramsey could do that role just as well. I think Wilshere could do that job just as well. They could interchange. With Arteta finally finding a little bit of form, and I think against West Brom, he actually put balls forward for once, Arteta, which was great to see. And then just resemble our favourite chap from Brazil that's now gone. But yeah, so no, I reckon, to me, Ramsey is what's holding that midfield together at the moment, as daft as it may sound. And Song's a good player. He has his dodgy moments. But I like the idea of Ramsey, Wilshere and Mikel Arteta.
You talk about the Brazilian guy who apparently was sent on loan to São Paulo. As far as I'm concerned, because the guy does nothing with the ball at his feet, Arteta is just a Nilsson in a better wig. I mean, I tell it like it is.
He gets more off the ball for a start, and he actually... Anyway, I'll let Mike speak, but yeah, that's very, very harsh.
But Mike, are you going to drop in February when Jack Wilshere comes back?
I think it's going to a lot depend. It's going to be on who's in form and who's not, and who's got injuries and who's got suspensions. I don't think we don't need to make the decision now, because Wilshere sadly is not available for us. So we'll no doubt have the other conversation in a month's time. Right now, I'd probably say rotate them. Rotate the likes of, well, all three of them. I think Wilshere could fill any of the three roles. So rotate them. They don't need to all play together. I don't think it's the same as the defence where a unit sticks together and learns from each other and does better as a result. I think a midfield can be rotated more easily. If I had to pick right now, I'd probably say Ramsey, because I think, although he's playing really well, and I agree with everything Mark says, I think he is going to be a fantastic player. He probably needs to speed up his final ball a little bit. Too often he might hold on to it for a split second so long the chance is gone. But I think Arteta, I think he's a sensible player. I think he's playing, I mean, he said it last week in an interview, he's kind of playing within himself because he knows he needs to protect the back four a bit more than maybe he had to at Everton. And that's great to actually find or see or midfielders taking that responsibility and not playing what maybe comes naturally, but doing what's right for the team.
Simon, are you thinking that Jack Wilshere replacing Song one get one every three games or something like that, is that appropriate despite the fact this is a guy who looks as though he's going to play in an attacking midfield role for England?
I think I agree with what the guys have said. I think that if people are available, you can rotate. I think that they all have relatively interchangeable kind of roles. And I think with Arteta, he brings a fantastic experience and a composure that we have been missing so much. I think at the weekend, the performance overall was quite assured, and that was partly driven by him. And the fact that, you know, he's got such intelligence, he knows to kind of hang back, as Mike's saying, just to make sure that the team is cohesive. I think with Wilshere, I think there's very much this feeling that Wilshere and Ramsey are a kind of combination for the future. And at some point, maybe when Ramsey's had enough games to feel particularly confident in himself, maybe a touch more so than now, I think that will eventually become a key partnership, and then it will become a case of who plays with them. I think together with this idea that Arteta is helping to make the midfield tighter and more composed, one thing that does my head in with Song is just the way he bundles in and gives away free kicks in the final third. That is such a danger when you consider it on top that we are, or at least until the last few weeks, been particularly poor at dealing with set pieces. For goodness sake, if you can't win the ball immediately, don't bundle in and knock somebody over, because teams have got cute to it and they just fall down. If it looks like a foul, the referee will give a foul. So I think Wilshere, the luxury will be, as we've said, if we aren't forced into having to play him because of lack of numbers, we can decide where we want to play him and in what kind of way. He can play a little bit further back, he can play further forward, depending on the formation, he can play particularly forward. Fitness will be the key, I think, to deciding who we bring in and when. But he is the future, Wilshere, as is Ramsey. Arteta, if you like, a bit less so. And then you've also got the others. You've got Frimpong and Coquelin as well, who I really actually was impressed with at Old Trafford.
Coquelin was great, actually.
Yeah, I know it was an awful day, but I thought he played quite well. Mm-hmm. I thought he was quite progressive there.
To be fair, it was as soon as he went off that we didn't fall apart. We'd already fallen apart by then, but we fell more apart.
Yeah. we've actually, despite some of the negativity that people do feel, it's worth looking at the things that are positive, and we have got some good players there in midfield.
Amazing what a five-figure Chelsea does. I've changed my I really am a total turncoat and the biggest hypocrite on this planet.
We will have to do a podcast
after
later.
We lose.
We'll have to do a podcast later in the year with clips from the first couple of months, won't we? Yeah. What we said then and what we're hopefully saying completely different.
Yeah. If we can make sure we do the next one on the Monday after we play Manchester City at their grounds, yeah, that'd be great. That'd be most people think you could imagine. I've got a load of things I could ask about the football side, which I'll come back to. But right now, we are very, very recently off the back of the AGM meeting. And Mike, you're a shareholder and you attended the club's AGM this year. Apparently there was a bit of dissent amongst the small shareholders.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I've been to probably the last four shareholder meetings, or four AGMs, and it was certainly the most fractious atmosphere that was there. You could sense it, and for some reason, it seemed to take the board by surprise, which is a worrying sign because it really shouldn't have done. I think everyone expected it. I have to say, I go to the AGM for the last 4 years. And I take the day off work and halfway through the AGM I think, what a waste of a day's holiday that is, because it's the same every year. Peter Hillwood bambles on, and you know, bless him, Arsenal traditionalist, great, and I have no problem with him I don't really have a problem with him still being there, but as a figurehead I don't want to hear him talk, especially at an AGM. Cronky, they sort of said at the beginning, said, oh, you know, Stan will say a few words, and it was general murmur. It was like, oh great, we're going to hear Stan actually say something, and just the look on his on Stan's face, he sort of raised his eyebrows, if so, you know, what, I don't know why you want to hear from me, you know. And it was like, has no one briefed you? You know, we've been building up to this moment for about the last month and a half. Stan's going to speak at the AGM, silent Stan. And I think I joked afterwards, I said, I want a t-shirt that says I was there when Stan spoke. GoonShirts.com, one for you there. Extra little plug. There was the questions that were asked, they're all pre-submitted, so they've got plenty of time, the board have got plenty of time to draft their answers and come up with something. But it just felt like, I don't know whether it was just Hillwood's delivery of the answers, but it just felt like the answers had been jotted down on the back of a fag packet about 10 minutes beforehand, and they were read out, and like they didn't really answer the question most of the time, or they were dismissive of the question. You know, somebody sort of called for Hillwood to resign and he just said, I've got no intention of going anywhere. End of story, you know? And it was like, And somebody should be on me, said that shame, pity, you know, and shrugged his shoulders, moved on to the next question. So it was hopefully Stan being there would have got the message that that the fans weren't quite as on board as they had been 12 months previously. Wenger did come on at the end and gave a passionate speech, which got a lot of press the next day and took so much weight off the board. And that is why Wenger is there every AGM, because he's got the ability to.
There's
do
a headline.
Yeah.
Much easier to focus on that than the dissent.
There were no mentions of Alicia Usmanov potentially getting just over the edge of 30%.
Yeah, no, there was. There was a question again which asked why Red and White Holdings, or would the board consider having representatives from Red and White Holdings on the board? And the answer was we see no reason to change the constitution of the board at this time. End of story. You just sort of everyone shrugs their shoulders and goes, why not? You know, why would you not even take part in a discussion about it? You're just going to give that actual answer and you like it or lump it. Go away.
With regards to Stan Kroenke, I mean, were you inspired by what he said? Did he send out the message you wanted to hear?
No, it wasn't inspiring by any stretch of the imagination.
Inspiring.
It took him by surprise that people wanted to hear him speak. And he just didn't have anything prepared. He'd come in on the red eye. He made a point of telling us that. That was probably the most informative thing he told us, actually. And he said, you know, it's great to be here. We looked around at lots of clubs, but I really had a connection with Arsenal. I was like, really? Which I think was the Colorado tie-up with the young the team. I love it over here, and you'll see lots more of me. And it was like, and he attended the game the following weekend, which I think was only his second game that he'd been to. So he loves it a lot.
He stayed on in the week for the thrilling 0-0 draw against Marseille.
He was there for that one as well, wasn't he? Lucky man.
Three games now, what?
Yeah. But again, you just feel that he's got this big PR machine behind him, who surely somebody would should have said, here, Stan, here's a script for you to read, which would have been a bit inspirational and given a bit more information. And we just want, you know, what are you planning to do? You come away going, I'm not sure you know what you're planning to do. So either that, or you're being very secretive, or you're just happy to let the status quo remain.
It's worrying that in light of the words of support he came out with for the Glazer family, who all own Manchester United, I've got an idea about what he wants to do in the club, but let's get our fingers crossed that we never see it happen. Well, one thing I also wanted to ask about what's coming out of the AGM. I mean, this is for all three of you. Is anyone surprised to see that the person honoured with a bus to put alongside Herbert Chapman, Sir Dennis Hillwood, and Arsene Wenger was Ken Fryer? The silence just about says it. I mean, Mike, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it was a bit baffling. I mean. It was a bit awkward, actually. I'll name drop a little bit. I spoke to Amy Lawrence from The Observer afterwards, and Ken was on the rotation to be re-elected as a director, and it was the first. There was only two. There was only him and Kroenke. Embarrassingly, Peter Hillwood almost forgot to get Kroenke re-elected, which would have been hilarious because they'd have had to do an EGM to just for that purpose. But fortunately, David Miles was on the ball and came across and said to Peter Hillwood, "Peter, come on, you've forgotten something. There's one more to do before you can go and have your G&T."
Wonderful.
But Ken Fryer was first up, and you know it was like all in favour. You know, virtually everyone stuck their hand up as you do at these things, and those against. And a couple of people stuck their arms up. Peter Hillwood, bless him, didn't spot them, said carried unanimously. At which point, there were a few dissenting voices. No, it's not carried unanimously, and yeah, I'm here. And you know, right, not quite carried unanimously, then passed with a vast majority or something. But, you know, Ken has been at Arsenal for so many years. That was almost a bit of an awkward moment. You know, I kind of felt awkward. Especially because they then went on to do this wonderful tribute to him and unveil a bust of him, and you went, oh, that's really awkward now, isn't it? We've just voted against him to be re-elected.
Did they chip off a bit of the bust to represent that to some?
And you know, I think Ken's a great man. I mean, he's done a lot for the club. Does he deserve a bust? I'm not sure. Does he deserve a bridge named after him? One, I'm not sure he does there. Does he deserve a bus as well? I'm struggling to see that.
I can't even think where his bus going to go. Presumably in the corporate entrance at the ground, I suppose.
Right place for it though, really. Put it in front of the Diamond Club, fine.
All I know is him and Danny Vitsman both had bridges named after them. As the fact that Ken Fry gets a bust on the end of it, you can't help but think, unlucky, Danny.
I think it kind of devalues the busts that Arsenal are known for. I mean, the
what the ladies did.
Herbert Chapman,
fake white. I mean,
how many more busts are you going to have?
Yeah,
just going back to the AGM. The thing with Kroenke is that, you know, he's a businessman, right? So he's Arsenal in a business sense. We are supporters, we see the football. So he comes in and thinks, oh, Arsenal, stable club, good finances, a board that isn't changing left, right and centre. Good club. Now, to us, we think we want to hear what this guy is going to say about Arsenal for the future. Where are we going? We're going to put money in, we're going to buy players, whatever. But to him, he's just thinking, why do they want to hear from an owner? To him, you know, probably maybe in the States, owners aren't particularly heard from, and who cares who the owner is? And maybe before recent kind of years in England, nobody cared who the chairman and owners were of football clubs. Mm. Now, in more recent times, it's become a bit more known about. So you probably don't really think that he should have any particular thoughts that fans would be interested in. But I thought it was a good thing that he seemed to stay on longer than he was initially intending to during that visit. And he went to meet the players and spoke to the players. I don't know if that's ever happened before, if he's ever done that before, but at least this was publicly presented. There were photos and things. And that's good. I think even if the players don't really care about anything that happens off the pitch, as long as they're getting paid, it must be something. It's quite cohesive for him to be there and say whatever he said. So I think that was good. The fact he didn't say more about where the club's going, I didn't really expect him to.
Going back to the footy side of things, rather than Arsenal was essentially a PLC, if you look at Arsenal Football Holdings. Anyway, apparently, Arsenal are currently 3 points better off than they were at this stage last season, with the same number of games played. Mark, do you think it's too late to generally mount a challenge with a title? And do you think Arsene Wenger has proved his critics wrong?
Is that stat true, first of all?
Yeah, apparently so.
Well, if that's the case, we're going to win the league. Woohoo!
Hey, we've only drawn our first game of the season. I think therein lies the problem.
In all seriousness, no, we're not going to win the league this season, but can we mount a credible challenge for third and fourth? Of course we can. I think there's a lot of chuff in this league this year. There is some rubbish teams. I think City aside, and even put United, you know, they've had a bit of a slip up recently, there's all to play for. It's a cliche, but it's damn true. Wenger hasn't put his critics wrong. He still should have, you know, the fact is we're still £16 million in profit in his transfer window, which is disgusting. The fact is he left it all to the last minute to buy our players in, which is disgusting. That 8-2 never should have happened, which is disgusting because he didn't act quick enough. No, Wenger's still culpable for a lot of stuff and you can't forgive him everything. I'm never going to forgive him for being 8-2 at Old Trafford, but he's our manager still. The fact is he was great at one point, and whilst the season goes on, whilst he's still there, I'm going to back him 100%. Not in this podcast, I'm not, I can slag him off, but whilst I'm at that stadium, I will give him my full love and attention and all my positive vibes. So I reckon we can easily come third or fourth this season, definitely. Wenger has still got a lot to do and a lot to make up to a lot of fans. I can't abide it when you go to the Emirates and all these fans are going, oh, I mean, that'd be awesome, Wenger. I start singing their stupid little songs, but they do, and that's fine. You've got to get behind him. So, a Churchillian speech to matchmakers at the AGM. Let's go for third place. No, I'm not sure. Either might, but you know.
You've aimed higher than he did. You've aimed for third.
Did he go for fourth?
He said when he was asked about can we finish fourth, he, I believe we can still finish fourth. That was the sum total of his ambition. Well, that's the way it came across. I'm sure it's not deep down, but you know that was what came across, and that did frustrate people. That. He sort of that was the limit he'd set.
Yeah,
I think being realistic at that time, that was probably fair because we'd be lucky to finish in the top half. You know what I'm saying?
But when you got fixtures played, you know we have been away at home at Stamford Bridge, been away at Old Trafford. You look at the away matches that we've kind of got out of the way so far. It's not beyond the realms, is it? We're going to come top.
Well, that point at Newcastle on the opening day is looking better and better with every week.
It's worrying with the fact that you've got Manchester City threatening or unbeatable record as much as anything else. I mean, Simon, where do you sit?
I think that, I mean, that whole kind of the unbeaten run, I think it's quite good for us that it's already been talked about, could Man City go the whole season unbeaten, because that opens that one straight out onto the floor. They can't just go along getting wins and hoping no one realises maybe they're trying just to stay the whole season unbeaten. And I think they will come a cropper away somewhere, even just in recent matches, away at Wolves in the League Cup, away at QPR. They didn't look too wonderful. I think they've got Liverpool soon, maybe away. That's the kind of game. They need a game away from home where they haven't scored before half time. It's still 0-0. It still looks like they're going to win 2-3-0. Mm-hmm. But then the other team get that goal in a context where maybe Liverpool are attacking the Kop. There's a chance City could lose. So I don't fear them going unbeaten. I felt in the summer that City and United would be the top two in whichever order at all. Could be either of them. And that the usual suspects, Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool, Spurs will be that next bunch. I've not had any particular concerns that we won't finish fourth, even when I was at Old Trafford and we got absolutely tanked there, because it's a long season. It's a 38 game season. Lots of teams can't hack it after whether it's 20 games, 25, 30. They get to the point where mentally they're out of it, let alone physically, and we can play a full season. So I've got no personal fears that we won't finish at least fourth. Like Mark's saying, I think third is available, in the sense that Chelsea really should have that,
yep,
financially, if nothing else. But I'm not so convinced, as I mentioned before, about the manager. And even just that game we had at Chelsea, as soon as you knew that Drogba couldn't play, you felt slightly more confident we had a chance.
Yeah.
He's not generally playing for them. That's got to be a help to our overall cause.
Just one thing quickly there. We're talking about Man City's unbeaten, or going unbeaten. The 49er record is under threat as well at the moment, because Huddersfield, I think, have gone 42 league games unbeaten. Wow. Now, it's a little bit disingenuous, because they got beaten in the playoffs, which is, to my mind, is a league game, but it's not. Apparently, it's not counted as a league game. So they're up to 42. Oh. So that's one to watch in coming
weeks. I suppose, in a way, if anyone can beat it, good luck to them, as long as they're not a team we don't like.
If it's all about Huddersfield Town over Manchester City, that's fine. Yeah. One last very quick question before we have to go.
That time already, David.
Hey, it flies when you're having fun.
It does indeed.
There's a story of Mikel Arteta walking into the dining room at the training ground and noticing that French boys ate only with the French boys. The British lads ate only with the other British lads, and so on. Mikel then pushes the tables together and says, "We all eat together as a team." Simon, do you believe this? And if so, what does it say about what has gone on before in the light of team spirit?
It's a good story, nothing else. It sounds perfectly plausible. It's good for a player who's experienced to come in from the outside and maybe see issues which others who have been there for a while take as being the norm. If you want a cohesive team on the pitch, you've got to have it off the pitch as well. There's no point having people who feel as if they're part of one group and not part of the other, because almost to the point where would one a group from the English lot pass to the guy from the French lot in a key moment. So they've got to be a team. I suspect that overall the players are looking at ways, and the intelligent players like Arteta are looking at ways to improve everything they can. And if it's a true story, I think it's a good one.
Mike. What are your thoughts on Mikel Arteta breaking the bridges down, keeping everybody at the same table?
I agree with everything Simon said, really. I mean, it's it's only going to be a good thing, isn't it? You can't see a negative coming out of that unless one of the Brit lads is going to smack one of the French lads in the face. I don't know, because I don't get on. But it's great. And I think it's right that someone coming in from the outside is going to see things that you become so accustomed to. You see every day that and they're going, "Well, that's strange. Why would you do that?" And the answer is when you go like that, "Well, why'd you do that?" "Oh, we've always done that." And that's the worst answer you can ever give to anyone. You know, if you don't know why you're doing something that's clearly not right, then you've got a problem.
Mark?
When the Berlin Wall came down many years ago, David Hasselhoff sung a song about for peace. Yeah, and he brought everyone, both East and West, Germany together, under the banner of David Hasselhoff. I like to think that Mikel Arteta is our David Hasselhoff.
He's got big hair.
And he has brought, you know, both East and West, North and South, together in the Arsenal team. And let's doff our caps to that great man.
That's David Hasselhoff.
Well, both great, to be fair. Though, to be fair, his recent appearances on Britain's Got Talent weren't so great, but leave that aside, because he was good in Baywatch. But in all seriousness, let's give us praises to the man they call Mikel.
At that juncture,
I believe the story, David. I believe it, and it makes me warm.
All right. I'm glad I asked.
Appropriate moment to go. I don't think Mark's getting warm.
You're next to me, Mike.
Mark getting on fire. We're going to take another short break before recording our third and final podcast of the evening. But for those of you who have just caught this one, if you want to email us about anything related to the podcast, the address is goonapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks once again to our sponsors, goonashirts.com. This is your host, David Udo, saying farewell and thanks for listening.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company, way!